Hoops fans, how you doing? It is your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of NBA Takedown. We are live coming at you here on a Friday. I believe this is the fourth Friday of the NBA season because we are 3 weeks and change into this thing. And you know what? He had to slum it earlier in the week going on the Zach Lowe show. But now he's stepping up to the plate with the big boys here on NBA Takedown. And I'd like to welcome Fred Katz of The Athletic. Hello, Fred. How are you?
I was great until about 1 minute ago.
That's unfortunate for you. Listen, yep. we all live with the choices that we make every day.
I know. For some reason I keep just talking to you and recording these conversations.
Do you think they would be better unrecorded? Because I think the recording really adds something to the flavor of it.
Possibly. I don't really know. Honestly, our unrecorded conversations should not be recorded.
So none of our conversations should be recorded. The fact that some of them are, I mean, everybody benefits. Speaking of poor choices, you had a couple stories this week, one of which, the poor choice I'm alluding to, you went to see the Washington Wizards play a basketball game, but it was for your job. So I guess it's okay.
You could watch a worse team than the Wizards. There are worse teams to watch. Maybe there are many worse teams than the Wizards. I could name like a few teams that are worse to watch.
Well, we're going to talk about them today. I should probably say what this episode is. So we're going to do our panic rankings, top five panic teams in the NBA. I know the thumbnail says top five biggest disappointments. I wanted to really focus on this episode because it seems like things are really going haywire and there is many pearls being clutched across the NBA. So I don't, you know, like there are some teams with winning records that you could say are disappointments. There are teams hovering around 500 that are certainly disappointments. I wanted to focus on the teams that are really in the thick of like existential crisis, perhaps. We're going to get to that in a minute. First, I did want to reference, we'll reference both of Fred's stories that came out this week. But I want to start with the one that I found to be the most refreshing, which is today in your Friday column, where you handle three things every week. You focus on three players, three teams, three things. And one of those was, I think, the biggest surprise in the league so far through 3.5 weeks, and that is the Phoenix Suns. You focus on Grayson Allen, but I kind of just want to tee you up. Talk to me about Phoenix, because it was a really nice thing that you wrote, and I want to explore it.
Well, I'll tell you this. Last year, I go to Phoenix at the beginning of the year because I think the Suns are going to be good.
Yeah.
I was not correct in that guess.
No.
But I thought the Suns were going to be good last year. So I go to Phoenix at the beginning of the year and I thought they were interesting. So I'm like, I'm going to write something. I go there at the very beginning of the season. They get off to a 9-2 start.
Oh, yeah.
My story comes out when it's kind of ready, when they're 8-1, but we say, let's hold it for a better date. Then Kevin Durant gets hurt. And we're like, run it now, just in case. They start off 9-2. My story runs. I think they lose. They somehow end up playing more than 82 games so they can lose 82 games in a row after that story comes out. And I'll tell you what, there were people with the Phoenix Suns who were like, you know what? Yeah, this is your fault. Like, you put out that story and this is totally your fault. And now I wrote something positive on the Suns again.
Yeah.
So maybe I ruined them. We'll see. But well, Grayson Allen's been fun to watch, man. This is not a Grayson Allen that we have seen in any sort of consequential way in the NBA. He is playing kind of like he did in college at Duke, where he's bringing the ball up more. He's doing stuff off the dribble. He's running pick and rolls. He's creating shots for himself. He's averaging 19 a game. Who's made the most threes in the NBA this year?
Would it be Grayson Allen?
It would be Grayson Allen. And Grayson Allen's always been a great three-point shooter. You know, he's always been a great three-point shooter. But he would take 5-6 threes a game. He would shoot a high percentage of those from the corners. high percentage of those is catch and shoots.
Yeah.
He shoot 40 some odd percent. Like, he's literally led the league in percentage at 46% a couple of years ago. Like, he's a great shooter, but we've never seen him. He's taken over 9 a game this year. He's still hitting 45%. He is taking 3 times as many pull-up threes per game as his previous career high. He's hitting 45% of those. He is barely taking any shots from the corners because their geography doesn't have them there, because they don't really have a point guard other than Colin Gillespie. So, like,
you did refer to Devin Booker as a point guard in your article, which I was very appreciative of after we just did a point guard draft here on the show. And I also counted Devin Booker as a point guard.
I mean, like, he's not a point guard.
He's not.
If you ask me what position is Devin Booker, I would say he's a shooting guard. He's a classic shooting guard. But if you said what position is Devin Booker playing, the answer is point guard.
There you go. Exactly.
If you just go by classic positions, like, someone's the point guard. You know, it's not Ryan Dunn.
It's my argument.
It's not Mark Williams. Like, Devin Booker's the guy who sets up their offense, who brings it up, who's their leading facilitator, their leading pick and roll guy, their leading assister by a mile. Like, Devin Booker's their point guard. They just don't have one. The Suns are in a perpetual state for the last 15 years of either having too many point guards or not enough point guards. Always.
Great call.
They either are like, we got to start Devin Booker at point guard, we got to start Bradley Beal at point guard, or they're like, oh my God, we have Dragic and we have Bledsoe and we have Isaiah Thomas. What are we doing here? Constantly. Too many point guards or not enough point guards.
You had a stat in the story about Grayson Allen that it was him and two other names in context and reference to pull-up threes. It was him, Steph, and who? I'm blanking on the third guy.
Derek White.
Oh, that's right. Derek White takes a ton of pull-up threes. So those are the three leaders in volume, right?
Yeah, those are the guys who have taken the three most pull-up threes.
Insane.
But Steph is shooting 36% on those pull-up threes.
Which is fine. Like, that's a good number.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Steph-like. Grayson Allen's shooting 46%.
That's Steph.
47%. He's been awesome. He's been so great. And the Suns team has been good. I mean, look, Grayson Allen is not the best player on the Phoenix Suns. Devin Booker has been fantastic this year. He's a better passer than he's ever been. Royce O'Neal is... I focused on Booker, but Royce O'Neal is hitting everything. Royce O'Neal's shooting 45% on almost 8 threes a game. And, like, that has to come down. Like, that just freaking has to come down. But he's been great. And Colin Gillespie's been really good for them too, off the bench. Just, like, really reliable organizer. He is the only actual point guard they have. Also a guy who takes a ton of threes. They're doing interesting stuff with their cutting. Like, everyone focuses on Miami, myself included, with in Cleveland, with all, like, the cutting, interesting cutting stuff, but they're really, really interesting cutting team too. They're, you know, I don't know if this is going to stick.
So they have the,
it's interesting so far.
They have the second longest winning streak in the NBA, or third longest winning streak in the NBA, excuse me, at 5 straight wins. Those wins have come over the Indiana Pacers, Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, and the LA Clippers twice. Spoiler alert, the vast majority of those teams are going to come up in our conversation in a little bit about the teams that should be panicking. They also have wins this season against San Antonio. That's a good win. Utah. And then Sacramento on opening night. And then per cleaning the glass, they are, in terms of net rating, plus 6.1. They have an 8-5 record. Like, they're scoring. Listen, according to cleaning the glass, they're top 10 in offense and defense, which, again, I guess against that schedule, maybe you say, all right, well, what does that really matter? I didn't have them at 8-5 after 13 games. And I doubt many people did outside of Phoenix.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think this is going to stick.
Probably not.
But I do think I was really low on them coming into the year. And I do think they're probably better than I thought they were going to be this year. Like, I would not have them. I mean, Indiana's worse than them. Brooklyn's worse than them. Washington's worse than them. New Orleans is worse than them. Utah's worse than them. You know, you go through, who knows about Dallas?
We're going to get like, they're not like a
bottom 5 team, I don't think. And the other interesting part is, you know, you need more than 13 games to be able to solve this kind of stuff, but it looks like Jordan Notch coach a little bit.
I mean, their next six are Atlanta at home, Portland on the road, three-game homestand, Minnesota, San Antonio, Houston, and then they go on the road to Sacramento before things get really dicey. If they could, like, I always wonder about this stuff, and you've covered the league for long enough, Fred, that I feel like you could offer a good opinion on this. Like, what is the line you have to get past where if you make it far enough into the season at like to this point and you have a good record, it like starts to actually really impact what a team feels like it is capable of, where they're like, you know what, maybe we actually are a team capable of winning 45 games or whatever the case may be. I don't know it, but I feel like if they could make it another like couple of weeks and still be a few games over 500, maybe it takes shape, but maybe that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it probably depends on the team and the team's will. Like I've covered some teams that have gotten off to bad starts and they're like, nah, we're good. Like we're good. And they turn it around. And I've covered teams that have gotten off to bad starts and they've been like, no, we're good. We're good. And they were cocky and wrong. And I've seen the opposite too, where teams have gotten off to good starts and internally they're like, yeah, this, I don't even believe this. You know, I didn't cover the 21-22 Wizards who started 10-3.
Oh my God, I forgot this. I remember that start, but that there was a lot of noise around that 10-3 start, if I recall correctly, in terms of like
the. Oh, yeah. And internally, when that was happening, they were like,
no.
How is this happening? What everyone's looking around. It's like, did we outscore another team again for 48 minutes? What is, because there was like, yeah, it was weird stuff going on behind the scenes.
I don't know.
Like, what? Why is Montrezl Harrell the second best player on the best team in the East? And then three months later, Montrezl Harrell got given away in a trade for Ish Smith, who was no longer like a rotation player. Like, what is
two guys that are out of the league right now? How long ago was this? Yeah. 4 years ago? 5 years ago?
21-22. Well, Ish Smith just, how old is Ish Smith? Late 30s now.
He's like your age.
Yeah, like late. Ish is like late 36, 37. So
sure.
Makes sense. He had a long career, beloved teammate. And Montrezl Harrell is not in the league because personality wise, I'd say he's on the other end of the spectrum of Ish Smith. Like the reason the Wizards traded Montrezl Harrell for Ish Smith was because they were like, we need to bring in. They had Ish Smith twice before. It was his third time on the Wizards because
you should get an award for that.
900 times.
You should get an award for being on any team three times. You should get a special award for being on the Wizards three times.
Well, Ish Smith has been on the most teams of any player ever.
I know. I see. Well, and Clyde knows it.
And it's because like, it's because he's genuinely one of the most beloved teammates I've ever covered in my, like in the tier one of most beloved teammates I've ever covered in my career.
If we had a basketball podcast that had, it was like a rewatchables and there was a that guy category, it would have to be named after Ish Smith. He is the that guy of the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy is the Ish is what it would be called.
Oh boy, that's I don't know if there's going to be a better transition opportunity other than that. Fun story on the Suns. The Suns are fun. We'll see how much longer they will stay fun for. You also you had some other mentions in that story. We're going to get to another team in a bit, but real briefly, you did write about the Cavs this week, which was like not a deep dive into the Cavs, but you went deep, you know, into their certainly stuff with the offseason, how they're playing now, who is their fifth guy going to be outside of the top five. The thing I found most interesting about that story, which focuses primarily on Lonzo Ball, is, again, you've covered the team for so long. I feel like when you're around a team, like some teams give off those vibes like, yeah, we know it's our time, which you would think maybe the Cavs would give off now. And yet you had an interesting little nugget in your story that said the ownership, people that run the team, whatever, it's not like, oh, if they don't make the finals or whatever this year, they're going to blow it up. Like they're going to be patient. Like they're a second apron team, but like doesn't necessarily mean they have to even necessarily get to the finals this year. So I'm curious what vibe from spending some time around the Cavs for a few days, and this is obviously relevant to Knicks fans listening to this, What vibe are you getting from that team?
The vibe I'm getting from them is absolutely patience. Like, that is totally the vibe I'm getting from them. It's not. And look, something that, like, I think I tried to portray in that story, I think I did it, is that, like,
I'll be the judge of that.
They're trying this stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, they're not 100% that this is going to work. Like DeAndre Hunter.
What's this? More. Hold on. Like, Mobley Allen is going to work? Like, Garland Mitchell is going to work? No.
Like, I have a whole section in there on DeAndre Hunter.
Oh, yeah, that. Sure. Yes.
That kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, DeAndre Hunter running five times as many pick and rolls as he did last year. It's like, that might not work offensively. They might want to go back to, and we're going to move him off the ball some more, put him in the corners. Like, it might not work. He's not a great passer, and he doesn't have the best, you know, assist to turnover ratio. And it might not work. It also has been getting him to the line a ton, and it's working in that sense. And that's propping up his efficiency, even though he's not shooting the three well right now, which he'll shoot the three better. He's a better shooter than he's been so far. I'm not too early for me to panic about shooting numbers, which is why I concentrated on Lonzo, who has not been able to hit a shot so far, but his process, I think, has been pretty good in what they're doing. And
the
I think
you started the story with was great, by the way.
Yeah, I liked that one. Kenny Atkinson said that I asked him about Lonzo Ball kick ahead passes and if teammates like have to adjust because it's like him and Jokic who are the guys who will just like toss a 60 footer and you're just like, wait, what? He threw that? And it was like a good pass. Like Lonzo and Jokic are to passing what like Steph is to shooting, you know, where it's like Steph will take a fadeaway 37 footer out of a triple team. And you're like
on TV, you say like,
what? Yeah. And then it'll swish in to clinch a gold medal game, you know? Yeah. And you're like, what in the freaking world was that? Like he did that. And that's like, okay for him. And Lonzo does that with transition passing. And because he's just a magnificent, He's a great passer in general, but he is a magnificent.
He was the second pick in the draft for, I mean, a few reasons, but I got to think his passing was probably the thing that got him taken that high.
Yeah, but he is just a magnificent transition passer. And so I asked Kenny Atkinson about kind of do guys have to be different? He was like, it's really funny you ask. There were like four or five times that Lonzo threw kick ahead passes and I just didn't think our guys were ready for it. So we actually concentrated on that in the film session.
That's great.
You know, I was telling this stuff. And so I was like, oh no. See, this is what goes through your head when you're a reporter. I was like, no, I'm so upset you said that because I'm like, that's a really good anecdote. And now I have to go because I have to write this. It's such a good anecdote.
Yeah.
I have to go. And now I have to watch every single pass that Lonzo Ball has thrown this season.
Oh, tough life you have.
And so I went through and I watched every single pass Lonzo Ball thrown this season. And I picked out what I thought was the most interesting example. Yeah. And
this is a good one.
Oh, no, I wish you had just told me a story and then I'd be fine.
Sucks being good at your job, Fred. What could I tell you?
I have to go and watch the whole thing.
The story is great, though.
That was interesting.
Yeah, no, the story is great. And like, I'm curious about the guy. This is a conversation for a different podcast, but I was noticing on like the KFS chat this morning, some people were going back and forth about like Orlando and Detroit and whether they're like real threats, you know, specifically to the Knicks in the East. And it made me think of the concept of, and it's not like a novel idea, but the concept of like certain teams are just more of a matchup problem for teams than other teams are matchup problems. And I wonder if the Knicks might be that for the Cavs because Brunson has two smaller defenders to pick on, not to mention like Merrill, you know, because they have a stretch five. So like, I don't know. And we're not going to get that answer maybe ever, but probably not until the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. And we'll see I don't know if they have a stretch five against the Cavs or if it's Mitchell Robinson against the Cavs.
Well, that's fascinating. Who's the five for most of that series?
Yeah, because Mitchell Robinson has eaten against the Cavs.
Yeah.
But Cat as a stretch five is a little better. I mean, I think if everyone's fully healthy and Mitchell Robinson can play actual minutes, I think it's probably Mitchell Robinson. Like, Mitchell Robinson is just, I personally have gotten to a point with Mitchell Robinson where I think he's too good to play matchups now.
I mean, the Knicks are outscoring teams by like 25, or it's some obscene number. I don't know if it's 20. Yeah. His on-offs are like plus 25. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's too good. Would you start Mitch at the five here, or would you start Cat at the five here? And I think Mitchell Robinson has just progressed out of that sort of conversation.
Nice.
My answer is just, you know, if you're going to have the conversation because you're talking about minute management and health and what's the best long-term thing for him, that's different. But if we're operating under the assumption that he's fully healthy and can play a normal amount of minutes, 25 minutes or something,
yeah,
then my answer, I think, is always going to be Mitchell Robinson should start. He is just that good of a basketball player now and that important of a basketball player. And I'm just like, I would figure out the flaws that he brings or whatever else. I figure it out because he is too good and too important. And it's just the same way how we're not like, oh, this team runs a lot of pick and roll, so would you start Cat? And it's like, no, you start Cat against everybody because Cat is an awesome basketball player. So even though he has some deficiencies, you know, you're not like, oh, would you start Jalen Brunson against this team that that constantly runs pick and rolls with him?
Okay. So now Mitchell Robinson is in like that category of player, not Brunson, Cat, all-star, all-NBA, but he's in like that level of,
okay. He's in the category of like, that guy's a starter. I think the Knicks, there are five guys on the team where I'm like, those guys, like, there's no scenario in which I wouldn't be starting OG Anunoby. There's no scenario in which I wouldn't be starting Bridges or Brunson or Cat. And I am kind of at that point with Mitchell Robinson in terms of the quality of player he is. Well, he's that good of a basketball player now. He's just that good.
Don't tell that to the Deuce Hive. The next time,
and by the way, I don't even care about the spacing that he ruins anymore. I don't, because the offensive rebounding is so at another level. It makes up for it, and then way more.
But that's not the right verb to use. Ruin. He doesn't ruin. He impacts spacing in the traditional sense. He does not ruin. And Josh Hart, when Josh Hart is not going well, and when teams are really doing what the Magic were doing to Josh Hart in parts of that game, he can ruin spacing. Mitchell Robinson's never going to ruin spacing because he just brings too much gravity. But I get what you're saying. The next time I'm on Cats and Shoe, we have to do a draft, because it has to be a draft, of the top five, six, whatever, has to be an even number because it's a draft, most indispensable players on the Knicks ranking. But we'll save that.
When he is on the court, Mitchell Robinson is rebounding 28% of his teammates' misses. More than one in every four times the Knicks miss a shot when Mitchell Robinson is there, he gets the rebound. What?
He had four or five against the Magic, and it was like you barely noticed because it's so normal. Okay, we have to get to these. We have to get to these rankings. Are you ready, Fred?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
are we drafting or are we ranking?
No. We are ranking. We are not drafting. We're each going to get. Like, I'm going to give my number one, or maybe you're the guest, so you'll give your number one first, and then we'll go and we'll go as far as we can before we hit an hour. I devised. Inspired by your now frequent podcast chum, Zach Lowe, I devised a little grading system for my rankings. So I'm going to tell you what my grading system is. And I purposely didn't tell you this because I didn't want you to be impacted. I graded each team in four categories. Preseason expectations and how far they are falling short of them. How bad they actually are. Whether they have a way out or not, like this season, the way out of whatever problem they are in. And then just like a fourth unquantifiable category of like, maybe it's a little bit of like comedy factor. Maybe if like, you know,
vibes.
Sure. You want to call it vibes?
Panic vibes.
Panic vibe. Ooh, I like that. Look at you.
Yeah. That was my middle school band. The Panic Vibes.
You should do. I bet you know what game I bet you were and still are great at. I bet you're great at Two Truths and a Lie.
I haven't played that game in such a long time.
I might be because
some weird stuff has happened to me in my life. So like, I could just be like, especially if like someone doesn't really know me and doesn't know my profession. Like one of my truths could just be like, one time I called Kevin Durant Fred, and then Kevin Durant made me go viral on the internet for accidentally calling him my own name. Like that could be one of my truths. And if you don't know me, that's such a lie.
If I was playing two truths and a lie with you, I would automatically assume that the most normal thing was the lie.
That is true. That's what I would do.
Yeah, exactly.
That is what I would do.
Again, content for future episodes of various.
Yeah, my podcasts. Lie would be like, I got my wisdom teeth out when I was 16.
Yeah, that's going far too boring for you. Okay, so that was my scale. You want to go? I could go first, unless or if you have, you want to say. I want to hear your number one. Who's your number one?
Well, I didn't do categories. I basically just did vibes.
That's fine.
And vibes encompasses a lot of stuff, including the No Way Out stuff, and you know, can they turn it around and all that.
Absolutely.
I like how you said it's not a draft, but this is a draft.
Well, no, because I could take this. You're going to give.
Oh, you could take the same thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna give my number one after you give your number one.
Yeah, got it. Oh, it's not a draft. It's not a draft.
It's not a draft.
It's not a draft.
I'm sorry, it's not a draft. I know you love to draft.
Number one, the New Orleans Pelicans.
They were my number two. Okay, make the case.
So the Pelicans didn't just trade their own. They have the worst record in the West right now.
Yes.
And they didn't just trade their own first round pick. Like when they made that trade with Indiana during the NBA Finals last year, I didn't really process. And this is not just retro, you know, hindsight has made this trade look even worse.
Yeah.
But at the time, you could still look at that trade and be like, this doesn't make any sense. And I didn't really process at the time that trade didn't really make any sense. I just looked at it as like, okay, one first round pick for a future first round pick. They're evening it out. They want this pick for whatever reason. And it was like, I was in the middle of covering the finals. So I didn't really think about it. And then I just kind of forgot about it. I'm going back and I'm looking back at that trade. And that trade was Indiana had the 23rd pick in last year's draft.
Yep.
And they sent to New Orleans their, or they sent to New Orleans the 23rd pick in the draft.
Yep.
A second rounder. And they got back their 2026 first. And forget about the fact that Tyrese Halliburton tore his Achilles days later and that the Pacers now have one win 3 weeks into the season. Forget about that. Let's just evaluate this as it happened in June of last year. The Pacers were in the finals and Tyrese Halliburton still hurt. If you model out the Pacers 2026 first round pick at that time, I bet you anything that the models will tell you there's a greater than 50% chance that that pick is going to be better than 23rd. Because here's the reality.
Yeah.
Here's the reality. There are only seven picks after 23 to where that pick could be worse. And ultimately, what's the huge difference between 27 and 23? If you're 27, you're dying to get up to 23, throw in two second rounders, one in this case, one second rounder, and you get up to 23 if you're dying to make that trade even by the next year. And you're taking a risk that the Pacers won't, for whatever reason, bad luck, bad management, whatever else,
yeah,
in this case, bad luck, the Pacers won't bottom out. And not even just bottom out. Like if that pick ends up being 15, that pick ends up being 18, that pick ends up being 16. Like that's not a good trade. That's not a worthwhile trade. So that was a weird swap to begin with.
Can I touch on that for a sec?
Yeah.
Because you told me we were having a conversation a few years ago about the value of picks. and you told me that every team internally has their own kind of like valuation system on picks, right? That are out there.
I don't know if it's really every team, but like most, and I'm sure different teams like look at that sort of analytical model differently and to put different context into it and all that. But yeah, I mean, at the very least, the majority of teams have something like that. Probably all of them.
Sure. Okay. So you know what this is? It kind of relates to my argument that I have with, I've had this argument with Andrew actually a lot about how, and other people, about how to me, a distant pick swap, like a 2030 in the year 2025, like a 2030 or a 2031 unprotected pick swap is like pretty close in value to a future unprotected pick period, because the teams that are looking at acquiring those picks, what are they looking for? They're not looking to get the 15th or 17th or 20th pick in the draft. They're looking for the golden chip. They're looking for the to open the Wonka bar, and you see that shiny thing staring back at you, and then you get to go into the factory. And there are so few of those bites at the apple out there in the league at any given time that to get one, and obviously you want it further out because who knows what's going to happen further out, but just to have one of those bites on the whatever percent chance the bite it lands, that's of immense value. And the Pelicans gave up one of those bites for the 23rd pick in the draft. And yep. It just was inexplicable.
Yep. And then they turn around and they use that 23rd pick along with their own unprotected to trade for Derek Queen at 13.
Yeah.
Now, if you do it as one transaction, because that's basically what it was, the Pelicans gave up what is going to end up being two lottery picks, maybe two really high lottery picks in a draft that is stacked. There was a chance the Pelicans could have had. Now, look, I think the Pacers would operate differently if they didn't have their pick. Let's put it that way. Like, now that the Pacers have their pick, they're going to make sure that the pick is really high. If they didn't have their pick, they wouldn't care as much.
Have they operated differently thus far?
No.
And they're what? What's their record? They're one in something.
But in terms of the rest of the year, like if they didn't have their pick, they would probably be like, all right, let's wait till Nembhard gets back. Let's wait till these guys come back from injury. They've been
sure. Rattled by injuries. Okay.
We'll get some guys back and then we're going to try to win. We're going to try to make the play-in tournament. And maybe that's they would have done it. They have a great system, a great coach, a great culture, a lot of good players. Like they would have ended up, they could end up with 30 wins and the 9th worst record in the league. Now that they have their own pick, I think they're going to make sure they end up with way fewer than that because they want to have that pick. But I mean, look, New Orleans has got to be sitting there being like, man, our pick is going to be one of the few with a legit chance at number one. Yep. The Pacers pick is going to be one of the few with a legit chance at number one. And it doesn't have to be number one for it not to be worthwhile. And, you know, somebody said to me the other day, they're like, hey, everyone's jumping on New Orleans so much for this. Like, what if Derek Queen is good? I'm like, he probably is going to be good, but do you know how good you have to be worth two, maybe top five picks in a stacked draft? Like he can't just be good. And unfair to Derek Queen,
Queen. It's completely unfair to him, but that's not what we're talking about.
I would say that I feel for him. I've never interacted with Derek Queen. I would say that I feel for him. However, from afar, he kind of seems like he loves it. Like, he kind of seems like he loves this. Like, I really enjoy his interviews and his personality. Like, he really seems to embrace this. He's clearly like confident as hell.
He's like a nice kid.
And he's like, yeah, you're going to trade all this. Of course, you're going to trade all of that to get me. Like, that's what I'm worth. Like, He's like, yeah, I'll live up to it. I love that. Like, he seems to love that pressure. So I would say I feel bad for him, but it's like, I'm like, I think the way he's handled it is like super cool for someone who's so young. Like, I think it's awesome.
But But that's also not the point. Like, it's like when the Knicks traded for Andrea Bargnani. Andrea Bargnani could have come into the team and had the best season of his career. There was no one else in basketball who was offering anything of value for Andrea Bargnani. It was a contract that the Raptors wanted to get rid of, and the Knicks gave them premium value for it. It's like it defeats the purpose.
Yep. And so they could, you know, now they're 2-9. The fact that they didn't, the fact that they unprotected the pick in the Atlanta trade for Queen, the fact that they didn't protect the pick. I mean, if they said to Atlanta, top four, protect it, I'm sure Atlanta would have done that deal. If they said to Atlanta, top one, protect it. Mm. We can't lose the first pick. Top one, protect it. Sure, Atlanta does that deal. I remember years ago, many moons ago, last time I came on this podcast, we talked about Corey Maggette. This time we're going to talk about another part of Clippers lore.
Of course, I know where you're going. Baron Davis.
Mo Williams trade?
How could I forget?
Yeah. 2008?
Well, let's see.
Nine.
It became the Kyrie 10, pick.
2010.
No, it was before that because didn't it become the Kyrie pick?
Right. It was 2010-11.
Oh yeah, that's right. And Kyrie. Okay. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, it was 2010-11 because Kyrie was the 11 draft.
Yeah.
But they traded. They were so desperate to get rid of Baron Davis, and Donald Sterling was literally heckling Baron Davis courtside of games. Talk about organizational culture. Just the craziest thing ever. Yep. And they were so desperate to get rid of Baron Davis that they attached their own first round pick to Baron Davis to trade him for Mo Williams.
I mean, it was a different time, but yes.
It was a different time. But I'll tell you this. At that time, it's not like people were like, ooh, great move.
No, they were not.
You know, and they did that. And their justification was like, they didn't protect it. Their justification was like, yeah, we're bad, but we're not like first overall pick bad. Like
they finished eighth or ninth in the lottery.
Eighth best lottery odds.
Yeah.
And then they won the lottery and the Cavs ended up with Kyrie. It's actually one of the best what ifs in modern NBA history. Because
the Clippers get Kyrie?
Yeah, well, so if the Clippers get Kyrie, that means the Cavs don't get Kyrie. Yeah. Does LeBron go back to Cleveland? If Kyrie's not there? That's one of them. Do the Cavs win all of those titles? That's another.
Yeah.
If the Clippers have the number one pick and the consensus number one overall pick is Kyrie, and they draft Kyrie in 2011, then they don't trade for Chris Paul 6 months later because they already have Kyrie.
And
so does Chris Paul end up on the Lakers?
But they had Griffin and Jordan at that point, right?
Yes. And so do you have a Kyrie, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, big three coming up as young players in LA? Where does Chris Paul end up? Does he end up with the Lakers? What does that mean for the end of Kobe's career?
Maybe he ends up with the Knicks.
Maybe. I mean, the Lakers, you know, maybe they rework that trade with the Lakers and he actually ends up with the Lakers because he wanted to be in LA.
Depends. Like, believe in conspiracy theories that the
Lakers And it's just like, what happens with the LA Clippers moving forward? What happens with the Lakers and with Kobe and with, you know, the entire Western Conference? And what happens with LeBron's career if he ends it in Miami, but like Cleveland still stinks and they don't have Kyrie and they don't have the talent? Like, does he go somewhere else? Does he stay in Miami? Does he still say, screw it, I'm going back to Cleveland, even though that team's not good? Does he not win a title in Cleveland? And like, what's LeBron's like maybe the best player of all time? What's his legacy if he doesn't get his title in Cleveland, which is like the defining moment of his entire career? Like, it's a great what if.
It is a great what if.
And all the Clippers had to do was just top one, protect it.
And they didn't. Well, we'll see how this one goes for the Pels. They were my number two, and the only reason they were my number two below my number
one. John, can I say one more thing?
You can say as many things as you want, Fred.
Mo Williams was good for the Clippers.
Mo Williams was a good basketball player, yeah.
He was, and he was good for the Clippers. He was a really good sixth man for them. He was good, and he was on good teams. Oh. He was good, and he was a bench energizer and all that. And guess what? We didn't mention Mo Williams when we were talking about this trade. Like, so like Derek Queen could be good. Derek Queen could be really good. Like, guess what? Trey Young ended up being a multi-time all-star point guard, like an all NBA point guard, yeah, who's just like a 28-10 machine who's led the league in assists last year and can just hit these crazy shots and all this stuff. And guess what? Does anybody sit there thinking like, man, the Hawks did okay trading Luka for him on,
you know, what draft. I just realized though, Trey Young, it should be the happiest person in the league about the Luka trade to LA, because he now no longer has to live with the fact that he was part of the worst Luka trade in the history of the NBA.
I said that to someone with the Hawks.
What did they say back to you?
They laughed.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah. I said, congratulations. No one is going to mention you guys when they talk about the Luka trade now. It's totally forgotten. You're good.
I forget who they beat last night, but the Hawks, listen, man, Hawks are
interesting.
Interesting NBA story.
7-2 since Trae Young got hurt.
For a lot of reasons, they are an interesting NBA story.
Johnson looks awesome.
Well, that was, I mean, everybody could have figured that, but yeah.
Honestly, it is nice. He's my answer right now for most underrated player in the league. What's your answer? Most underrated player in the NBA right now.
I don't know if he's underrated because I think he's been getting a lot of, not
I think
a lot.
He gets like smart NBA Twitter love.
No. The guy I'm about to say, I don't know if he's underrated because he's been getting some buzz for most improved, but it's because of where he plays. And because I think people on the East Coast, unless you play for like the Lakers or the Warriors, maybe don't think about you as much. But the first name that came to my head was Denny Avdia.
Yeah. Really good.
6 and 1 half dozen the other, those two. But like both guys are the best player on a good team that's surpassing expectations, I would say.
Denny Avdia is like, oh my goodness, this guy's freaking awesome.
Well,
like,
speaking of regrettable trades, either Bob Carrington or did they make the other pick yet? I forget if they even made the other pick. One of those.
No, they haven't. They haven't made the other pick is 27, I think. But yes, totally.
I mean, they better your old squad there. And they've done a lot of smart stuff too.
They've done a good job. That one, they signed Denny to an amazing contract. Great.
What's he making? Like $14 million a year or something?
Yeah, and it's declining.
Yeah, it's.
He's averaging right now. He is averaging 26-6-5. He's career high efficiency numbers. He's taking 7 threes a game. Remember when he couldn't shoot? He's taking 7 threes a game now and hitting 38% of them.
You know what's going to be funny? When
now we have the transition.
Now that we have the new All-Star selection rules, it's going to be funny when like 13 international players are among the 24 and then the commissioner has to select whatever it is, like 7 American players.
Yeah, I mean, Denny, I have to do it out. Denny.
Oh, he's
got to be an All-Star, right?
How do you not? I mean, listen, the team could fall off. But I mean, if they're around 500 and he keeps this up, like,
right. Like, it's not like he's not putting up good stats, bad team situation.
No,
even if the team does fall off, he's not playing like it's not like he's like scoring in spite of his team. He's playing beautiful basketball. He can guard too.
And
he's
a good defensive
player. He's good on the perimeter.
Absolutely could guard. But there's also like no question when you watch them, he's the guy. Like, they have other good players, but he's the guy.
I mean, look, he's got a chance to be best Jewish player in a very long time.
I mean, you know, but who is the best Jewish player in the history of the league? Fred Katz.
I mean, are we counting Amari?
Are you counting? Let me ask you that question. Are you counting Amari?
I don't
Amari?
Know. Does Amari considers himself Jewish, right?
I believe he does, but he certainly was. I do not believe he was for the majority of the time that he.
No, that counts. I mean, the answer is probably Dolph Schayes.
Oh, Dolph Schayes is absolutely the answer. Yeah,
the answer is Dolph Schayes.
He was one of the top 50. Did they knock him off top 75?
I have no idea.
There were a couple guys that got knocked off.
Yeah, the answer is Dolph Schayes.
The answer is Dolph
Schayes. He went to like NYU.
And why you used to be a bet? How are we talking about players from the 50s who went to NYU?
I think he was he's a Jewish dude from the Bronx who went to NYU, and I think he studied like astrophysics.
Of course,
and it's like that's the most 1950s Hall of Famer I've ever heard. Just like
I had that's great. Okay,
Sabonis is Jewish.
I didn't know that. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
He's a really good player. Will he be in Oslo this year? Okay. We're 47 minutes into the show, which is supposed to be a top five, two top five lists of the most panicked teams in the NBA. We've gotten through one pick. So let me make a pick. My number one pick is the Clippers. And for part of the same reason why you took the Pelicans first. I took the Clippers first because they also do not control their first round pick this year. It goes to either Oklahoma City or Washington. There's some funky stuff because of trades that happen afterwards. I'm just going to ask you, Fred Katz, putting aside Ivaka Zubac, who has had, as you, I believe, discussed with Zach, or Zach discussed with somebody recently, has had a bit of an underwhelming season, but he's still awesome and he's on a really great contract, $18 million this year, 19.5 next year, and then 21. Is there a single player on the Clippers who, at their salary and given their contract situation, you would define as a positive asset, let's say?
Yeah, probably.
I'm looking at it right. So we got Kawhi, 50 this year, 50 next year. Do you think Kawhi is a positive asset?
Kawhi, you know, this is why Kawhi is like going to have one of the most interesting legacies in the history of the league.
He's top five most interesting legacy guy among great players in the history of the league.
I think for some teams, Kawhi is a positive asset. But for most teams, he's not. I think if you're a team that's just like, we're going to make the playoffs. Like, we're going to make the playoffs. No matter what, we're going to make the playoffs.
Okay.
We want to win a title once we make the playoffs. He's a positive asset.
Yeah, but you have to give up so much salary to get him that what team out there can do the exact thing that you're alluding to without decimating their team because of the salary they need to give up? I don't think there's a team.
The Clippers, which is why he's not getting traded.
Which is why he's not getting traded.
By the way, can we just say that aspirations slogan should have been "Money does grow on trees."
Hold on,
how is that not their slogan?
I'm actually mad at you for wasting that line. We love NBA Takedown here. Thank you, everybody, listening, subscribing, the whole thing. Sadly, we do not have the listenership yet for that line to have been worth this broadcast. You should have saved that for like next time you're on the Low Post. And in fact, I think you should use it next time you're on not the money, Low Post, Declo Show.
Money does grow on trees. It would work.
It works great.
I think there are teams that would be like, I mean, look, Kawhi's not getting traded. But
yeah, if like
ultimately he's more valuable to the Clippers than he is to somebody else. But
like the Sixers would trade Paul George
some money so he can't get traded,
you know, for him. But like, you know, you're trading questionable money for questionable money. That's why I don't think he's a positive asset.
Chris Dunn is a positive asset.
Chris, okay, yes. He was the one guy I was looking at who has a team, a very nice little tidy team option for 5 points. So you know who I like Chris Dunn on? And we'll see, maybe I don't know if they would. What they would have to do. I'd like Chris Dunn on the Knicks. I think Chris Dunn's a really good basketball player.
Chris Dunn is one freaking hell of a defender. He is so awesome. I think Derrick Jones Jr. is a positive. He's a good player.
10 and then 10.5 next year. Okay. That's
he fine. He is another just really good wing defender.
He is. He's an exceptional wing. Okay. But neither of those guys are netting you. Like,
no, nothing amazing. I'm just we're going through like their role players.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm
between
with you. I mean, Harden is like,
well, he's been awesome this year.
Harden is fine. Like, people would want James Harden. Harden is fine.
Again,
he's been a stiff defensively.
In a vacuum, you're like, okay, people will want James Harden. Like 39 is not the most money. $42 million player option. And then it's like, again, who's trading for James Harden? A team that thinks they might be able to like win a championship this year. Okay. What $40 million in salary are they giving up to accommodate him? And as we know, because he said it, he doesn't play in a system. He's the system. So like you're upending your apple cart for this guy. This is my point. You have to ask these questions about their top players. They don't have their pick. They're not good. Ty Lue is clearly like searching right now. That's why they're my number one. So yeah.
No, it's a good, I mean, they were my number two. You're totally right in the whole thing.
So who's your number three, since we have the same one and two in inverted order?
My number three is Dallas.
They were my number four.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't have that much original stuff to say about Dallas. I mean,
what else is there to say?
Look, the reason, you know how you know that they're a panic team? Maybe they should have been number one. Because they fired their GM 3 weeks into the season. Isn't that but that's a panic move. And by the way, I'm not saying it was like the wrong thing to do. I'm just saying that's a.
What
is panicking if not firing your GM a few weeks into the season?
Do you think most teams around the league, with the caveat that like you work for your owner and your owner says what goes, and if your owner's being irrational, like, you know, I know as our mutual friend Yaron Weisman came on the show several weeks ago and said, like, he told the story about Rob Pelinka and another GM saying, like, it's your job as the lead basketball executive to convince your owner to do things in the best interest of your team. But like with the caveat that some owners are just like, they have their head up their ass. Do you think most teams around the league look at the Anthony Davis situation and where they are as a team right now and would view it as irresponsible for the Mavs not to try to trade Anthony Davis, let's say before the deadline?
No, I don't, because I think it's too early. Like, it's still November
14th. Before the deadline is too... Oh, okay, I was just saying. It's like, too early
it's still
to decide
November
that.
14th, and I That's think fine. If the Mavs... Look, he's extension eligible next year, and they don't have the pressure of having to extend him now because Nico is gone. They don't have that pressure. And the reality is, around the league, we are seeing teams play more hardball on extension than we're used to seeing in the modern NBA.
You've been all
over
this.
It used to be like, you're awesome. I mean, ever since Brunson signed, I was like, this is going to be more of a thing. It's going to be more of a thing. And Brunson was the most extreme example of it. But we're seeing teams play hardball now in a way they have. And you look at Houston, they played hardball with all the rookie scale guys and got them on good deals. And you know what? It's fine. Nobody's freaking out in Houston. They're really good. And they've done an awesome job putting that team together. And yeah, they have flaws as a team, but it's mostly because Fred VanVleet got hurt. Like they're still really good and they're really well run. And you look at some of these other places on extensions, you know, Atlanta, like I think 12 years ago, if you just displace Atlanta and you just put them in a time machine, you send them back to 2015 when people would say, oh, you know, you extend your max player, like, and you give him the max, he's your max guy. And you don't really negotiate it. You don't want to upset him. You don't want to make him feel undervalued. You just give him the money. Like Atlanta would have extended Trae Young, you know, like Atlanta didn't even really have conversations with Trae Young. Like there's no progress on an extension there. There wasn't really a starting point on an extension there. Yeah. These teams are feeling more, you know, Mikal Bridges would have gotten 4 for $156, not 4 for $150. And that's just a small example because he was eligible for 4 for $156.
Yeah.
And that's just a small example. And we're seeing bigger ones. So I think Dallas could just be like, no, here's the deal on your extension. We're not going to go too high because of age and injury concerns and all that kind of stuff. And then they figure it out. And we don't know what Dallas is going to be 2 months from now. If Dallas is sitting at 14th in the West and it's mid-January, I'm with you. However, they might not be. They might not be. They might be. And the evidence right now is pretty scary, which is why I have number three on the panic list. But like I'm like, I would be like panicking about having to panic if I were Dallas. I'd be like, okay, you know what? I'm not panicking, but I better prepare my panic alarm because I'm going to have to hit that in a couple months if this thing continues. But like, they also panicked because they fired their GM. So that's the panic move.
That's totally. And just the specter of like, you know, I don't, we just did a whole show on it, so we don't do it again, but just like, yeah, firing Nico, I guess, makes the fans feel a little better. But like, my point the other day was like, if I was a fan of Dallas, it would be actually a part of me that felt worse. Like, you let this guy do this, and now he's you did this. It's like, what are we doing here? I couldn't put them at three because they have Cooper Flagg, and that's at least a guy, which is why the team that I have number three is Sacramento. Sacramento does own their pick, just like Dallas does, we should note, which is probably why neither of them in there are top two. But again, it's similar to the Clippers conversation, which is that, like, yeah, they have guys. They have Zach LaVine. They have, you know, Schroeder. They have the Malik Monk is still on this team. DeRozan, whom I forget, is Sabonis. Russell Westbrook. who's been their best player probably since he came aboard. But, like, what are any of these players getting you? And the reality is, as many have said, they are probably just going to be good enough to be, you know, the 11th or 12th best team in the West. And, you know, odds can, you know, we saw what happened with Dallas last year, but the odds are they will not get that premium pick. And it's just like, you know, yeah. So that's why they're my number three. Dallas is my number four.
Yeah. Sacramento was my number four.
So, all right. So let's end the list. Who's your last team?
I went a little off the board.
So that means we're going to have a different fifth team. And I wanted to go off the board, but I couldn't justify it. So I'm curious who you went with.
The Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's very funny.
Because I'm pretty confident at this point.
Yes.
Like, everyone's hurt. Yeah. Jalen Williams has not played a second.
Yeah.
I think their net rating is better right now than it was last year when they set the record for net rating.
I'll look it up on Cleaning the Glass right now.
I'm pretty confident that some very prominent people there sold their souls to the devil.
That's just,
and they should be freaking out about the afterlife. They are going to be screwed. Like, if you believe that, if you believe in reincarnation, you believe things are going to even out from life to life. They are so screwed in their next lives. Oh my God. This is not supposed to be this good. I'd be freaking out.
Well, reincarnation is
crazy.
No, but if you come back as like some, like, you know, like a gnat, like, that would be unfortunate, but you'd probably die soon. And then you're that's it. You get to move on to the next thing. If you're like facing an eternity and damnation, you know, eternal damnation, that would give me more.
That's pause. True. I think they're probably facing eternal damnation because that's the only way that a basketball team could be this.
But they're plus 17.4 per 100, according to Cleaning the Glass.
Yeah, the best net rating of all time. And
yeah,
they have not had Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren has missed games. He's playing awesome, by the way. Chet Holmgren has missed games.
They have four players, I think, that have appeared in every game. And one of them is like not really a rotation player.
Aaron Wiggins was hurt. Isaiah Joe was hurt. Yeah. Lou Dort was hurt.
Yep.
Caruso.
I'm trying to think, what did the Celtics start off? My memory is shit. Did the Celtics start? They were good to start off last year. They weren't this good.
No, no one's this good.
No, I'm trying to think of the last time we had a defending champ start off a season with this, like, that was this.
Yeah. Good. And it's
like, that's the Warriors.
Maybe, you know? Yeah, it was the 16-17 or the 15-16
it was the second Durant, before Durant.
It was the 15-16 Warriors, the 173 games.
Yes, duh. Yes.
And okay. You know what? I said coming into this year, we did a thing on The Athletic. We were supposed to submit bold predictions. And I put a thing this year for my bold prediction. Thunder wins. I think I said Thunder win 74 games.
Jesus.
And look, obviously it's a bold prediction. So like you get a little crazy with it, but I'm not going to put something that like, I don't actually believe.
They're 12.
And like, I was like kind of bracing for that. I was like, this team is crazy competitive and they're going to be better. They're all young. I mean, like AJ Mitchell is just really good player. Like AJ Mitchell's just like an efficient 17 point scorer and a second ball handler. Fred, next to Shea.
I'm getting to the point where, and again, I'm not someone who holds not getting the 35th pick in the draft or whatever the hell AJ Mitchell was on your team. I'm not someone that generally holds that against teams and my teams that I root for, but like Jalen Brunson just went down with an injury. He's gonna be out for a few games. Like if either we don't see Tyler Kolek here at all, or he comes and he doesn't play great, and then like they had two picks in that range, Fred.
You know what?
I know.
No one can be compared to Oklahoma City. It's just no one.
Then what are we doing?
No one can be compared. What are we doing? We're watching this team that sold its soul to the devil. Clearly.
Oh my God.
Bounce.
Sorry.
Every other team in the league just annihilate.
Can I read everybody. You their next bunch of games? At Charlotte, at New Orleans, Sacramento at home, at Utah, Portland at home. They've lost to Portland, something tells me they're going to be up for that Portland game at home. And then it gets a little tougher. Minnesota, Phoenix, Portland again, Golden State. Like at this point, if they did not go start 16-1, it would be a massive upset because of those next four games.
Yeah, they're crazy. I mean, just like look at Aaron Wiggins has become like awesome. Just like an awesome, awesome player. Isaiah Joe is insane off the bench. He's taking like 9 threes a game now.
Yeah.
And just like nailing 40 some odd percent of it. He's always been a great shooter, but now it's just like, oh no, a bunch of guys are hurt. So Isaiah Joe, you come in and step up. Oh wait, now Isaiah Joe, you're just like one of the 10 best shooters in the NBA. So it's fine. Oh, AJ Mitchell, two-way player last year. Come on in, do some ball handling stuff because we're missing guys. Oh, okay. You're just like the sixth man of the year. Like it's just insane.
So this,
it's insane.
It's a different conversation for another day. And it's actually something we already did a thing on a few episodes ago in terms of like comparing this MVP race. We're going to periodically throughout the season compare it to some other great MVP races because I think this has a chance. What I'm going to pitch to you, I think this has a chance to be the greatest MVP race of all time. And I don't say that lightly because I'm crazy when it comes to like old minutia. And I know you are too, to some extent, but like Nikola Jokic right now is leading the league in assists and rebounds. And he is shooting 70% from the field, which I think is good. And he just put up the most efficient 55 point game in the history of the league. Giannis is still doing Giannis stuff, although I don't know if he's going to be able to keep this up. If SGA is the best player on a 70 win team, like, where are we headed here?
SGA has also been. This is the best defensive season of his career so far.
That's a good call. I hadn't thought about that.
He's always been a good defensive player. Very good defensive player. He has been so good on switches this year, which is huge for him because he's the guy who other teams pull into pick and rolls. Like he gets attacked.
Yeah,
but more than basically any other player in the league this side of Trae Young.
By default, because who else are you going to attack?
Exactly, because the other options are like Kaysom Wallace, who's leading the league in steals and is like all defense caliber. Alex Caruso, who's like maybe the best guard defender in the league. Lou Dort, first team all defense. Jalen Williams, second team all defense. Like those are your options. Like Chet Holmgren, all defense caliber if he plays 65 games. Isaiah Hartenstein, all defense caliber if he plays 65 games. So it's like, who are you going to attack? You got to attack Shea, who's really, really good, but he's just not like literally an all defense guy. He's not just one of the 10 best defenders in the league because of the 10 best defenders in the league. It feels like 11 of them are on the Thunder. Like that's what happens when you sell your soul to the devil, which is clearly what happened here. And this is why I'm panicking for them. Like it is insanity. It is crazy. And Shea is even better at that now. He had thought he did a really wonderful job last year. Just constantly being targeted. Also, to constantly be put into actions and then to be able to have the energy to be the engine of a title team on the offensive end and literally be an MVP in the process by putting up one of the most efficient 30-point scoring guard seasons ever, on top of being the leading distributor and everything else, is amazing and says what kind of shape he's in too. But I think he is the best defender he's ever been. You're right. It's a crazy MVP race. Like, that doesn't even mention the fact of like what Wemby is doing.
Yeah, no, there's other guys who in a typical season would be like,
and Luka.
Well, I can't wait to see LeBron on that team. I don't know when he's going to wind up making his debut. Would you ever? Well, I don't know where it's going to be. Would you want to cover that game in person?
Of course, I would want to. Sounds like a blast.
You should go cover it then.
Sounds like a blast. I love watching LeBron play basketball. I try not to propose too many LA trips because it makes it just seem like I'm trying to use the company to go to LA.
No, fuck that. That's his first game back. That's like,
yeah, but we have a fantastic Lakers beat writer, you know.
Yes, I know. Whatever.
And so it's like it's hard for me to justify that. Like, oh, I want to go. Why do you want to go? Sounds awesome, you know. But we have Dan there.
Come up with a great story. Ever,
is like one of the best beat writers out there. Yeah, yeah, but it sounds pretty awesome for me.
Yeah. So I 2 minutes or less because we're running long. I wanted to give you a chance to pump up the other another team that you mentioned in your story today. My number five was Memphis, who you wrote about again in your three things column today. Give me a minute on the Grizzlies.
They just don't play hard enough.
Yeah.
I so rarely say that, like, about teams in the league, because I'll tell you what, when I was 14 years old, this is like a transformative experience for me.
Oh boy.
I wonder if John Michelson will ever see this. When I was 14 years old,
write that down.
I was at sleepaway camp.
I don't really know where this is going already.
So it was childhood friends. Haven't seen him since we were kids. Great athlete. Awesome athlete. So I'm at sleepaway camp and it's color war. And I'm the age group's color war captain.
I never played color war. I'm vaguely familiar with what color war is.
But the camp split into two and they compete in a bunch of different sports competitions.
Yes. Okay.
And it's super competitive. And
sounds like fun.
Kids all get, it's the most fun. Honestly, it's like literally the most fun. Color war every summer is literally the most fun thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Okay.
It is just the most fun thing ever.
It's great.
It's so competitive. The whole camp is just like so into it. It's awesome. So John and I were friends, great guy. And he was an awesome athlete. And we had lost, I think it was the flag football game. We had lost and he was on my team. And he and I like kind of got into it after.
Well, it sounds like you were on his team, but continue.
Yes. He and I kind of got into it after because he didn't play very well or something like that. For whatever reason, I thought he didn't approach it seriously enough. So I told
him. How old are you?
14. I'm picturing told him
14-year-old you coming up to John Michelson, be like, hey man, you fucking dogged it in that game. Don't try to beat her. Don't try to make it out like you didn't.
I told him that he didn't, I didn't think he played hard. And I was like, intensely. I was like, you gotta play harder than that.
Was there a finger to the chest?
No, it wasn't a finger to the chest. And he like kind of came at me, not like punch me or anything, but just like kind of like came at me. He was so pissed. He like kind of came at me and kind of just like pushed me and was like, don't you ever tell me that I didn't play hard. Like, don't you ever fucking tell me that. Don't you ever tell me that I didn't play hard. Like, you can tell me I didn't play well. Don't you ever fucking tell me that I didn't play hard. I'm going out there and played so fucking hard. And that was like a transformative moment for me as a kid where I was like, you don't play hard, impugn someone's character. Like, you don't play well, impugns their execution.
This is true.
And so I still think about that 22 years later.
You just told the story on podcast.
Yeah, John Michelson taught me a life lesson. And that's inadvertently. Great. So thank you, John Michelson.
That reminds me of when Mike Breen came on this pod years ago and was like, I would never say anything about a player on a broadcast that I wouldn't say to them to their face. Similar thing. Yeah. Mike Breen didn't yell at me, though.
Yeah, totally. And so,
maybe yeah, he did 100%. It in his, you know, on his own.
And yeah. So I don't like to write so-and-so didn't play hard. And I always try to find the reasons. And that's why I was like, am I really going to write the Grizzlies don't play hard? And then I watched a bunch of Grizzlies games. And then Tuomas Iisalo said, we're not playing hard. And I'm like, and I'm watching these Grizzlies games and I'm like, oh my goodness. Everyone's concentrating on Ja going through the motions. It's everything. And I wrote it in a way that I didn't want to, you know, I'm not around that team really at all. I was around them for when they came to New York this week and I wasn't even really around them. Like, I'm not around that team at all. Like, I can't write for certain that what's going on there. You hear things, but like something is off with that team, with the way that they don't communicate on the court. They don't run. They don't help. They don't guard. They don't get into their sets. What is happening? Ja didn't play in that game the other night.
The last game.
Against Boston. Yeah. And they still got annihilated. Like, it is, you know, Ja is kind of the face of what's going on there now. But, and I don't know if it's like, you know, like when the Heat were going through all that crap with Jimmy Butler last year, it was like the whole team was zonked. You know, it just affected everything. Whether Jimmy was playing or whether they told him to go away, like the whole team was zonked and it affected everything. And maybe that's what's happening here. For whatever reason, that team is not expending enough energy when they play basketball. And I can say that with a lot of confidence, and I am not worried about any of them coming at me for it like John Michelson did.
Well, I don't.
Great kid.
Yeah.
He was a great kid. It was the definition of, you know, like when you see two guys get into it on the bench and everybody else, I was like, oh my God, do they hate each other?
It's like, you know, no. You know what the Grizzlies should do? They should go find John Michelson and hire him, or actually put him on their roster, because you know he plays hard. And that seems to be what they need right now.
Man, he was a huge sports fan. So I hope John Michelson watches NBA Takedown.
Dude, you got to reconnect. Like LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm sure there's some way.
We were probably Facebook friends.
There you go. Go message him and just tell him, hey, John, thank you for everything you did for me. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Memphis should be even higher up on my list because of this. Like, it seems like their fan base has a real attachment to Ja Morant. And I just wonder how that impacts their, just like what they do moving forward. But I don't know. We'll see. Anything else, Fred, before I get you out of here, before I kick you off of my show?
I got nothing.
Nothing.
I'm upset that neither of us drafted the 2014 San Francisco Giants. Because that was
14.
That was Joe Panic's best team.
I mean, I was still in on baseball back then. I remember the name. If you would have been like
Joe Panic was their starting second baseman. So if we're drafting the best Panic team, if we're drafting best Panic teams, that was the best Panic team.
Yeah, I think
he hit 312 that year.
That's really insane. That I mean, I just like that. You know that it's just, so there's a lot wrong with you, but that's put Ed. That's somewhere high on the list. Clearly hard playing. What?
I know baseball stats. I'll tell you that.
Knowing baseball stats, accusing clearly hard playing young athletes of not playing hard. I mean, it's a laundry list of things. Where
I teamed his character, and I never did it to anybody ever again.
You learn your lesson. Let's hope the Grizzlies learn theirs. Fred, where, not that anybody needs to hear this, but where can people find you, your stuff, and the whole thing?
You can find me at The Athletic. You can subscribe to my podcast, Cats and Shoot, at patreon.com/catsandshoot. That's my last name, KatzAndShoot. patreon.com.
This is so ridiculous.
KatzAnd.
Is anyone, I don't know if The Athletic even close to as ridiculous as you. I like not knowing enough about their payroll. I can't imagine there is.
Maybe not.
Or do you just save this for me?
maybe not. I don't. I do this around the people I cover it too. People are like, who is this reporter? What is this guy?
He's Fred Katz.
Away from me.
The host of Katz Shoot on patreon.com.
Get him away from me now.
Which I'm not going to spell out again. All right. Everybody out there, I never know how to end a show with you. Thank you, Fred, for taking time out of you actually do have a very busy schedule, and I do appreciate you taking time out of it to come join me here to talk a little NBA. Everybody out there, thank you for checking out another episode of NBA Takedown. Please support the show if you watched this episode or are watching this episode on Twitter. Go ahead and either subscribe on YouTube or where you ever get your podcasts. We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. All that stuff helps us out. And yeah, that's it. We'll be back with more fun and games before you know it. Everybody have a great weekend. Fred, stick around for a sec. Peace out.